Let's get ready to football! Hello and welcome in. You're listening to the Let's Get Ready to Football podcast with your hosts, David, Thomas, and Colton.
Hey guys, welcome to the Let's Get Ready to Football podcast. This is your host, Thomas, and I am joined by the man, the myth, the legend, David Carver. David, how you doing today? There's no Colton today.
I am doing fantastic, Thomas. Absolutely fantastic. Colton's not here today, unfortunately. We will miss him, but not too much, of course. We'll just appropriately miss him appropriately amount. But I'll tell you something, Thomas.
Yeah.
I've kind of – this is going to come to a shock to you a little bit, Thomas. Because to the listeners, they don't know nothing about this. But, Thomas, you know this. I'm not this early rising person. Like I don't sleep in, but like I'm just like a normal wake up person, like eight to nine usually. That's usually when I wake up, like a normal person. Thomas is a crazy person that wakes up like he has nothing to do on the day. It's a weekend. He's like up at 4:30. But for school, I commute. For teaching. I'm a teacher. I have to commute. So because of this, I wake up at 5:15 every morning to commute, or 5:45. Sorry, not 5:15. 5:45. I was thinking of Thomas's craziness again. 5:45 every morning. And because of this, I, who am a huge coffee drinker, have stopped drinking coffee. I have a coffee shutoff time at noon, because if I drink coffee too late, then I can't go to bed early, and then I can't wake up in the morning, and then I'm tired and grumpy, which, you know, I'm sure people out there have had grumpy teachers. It's not a fun thing. But today, I broke the cycle. I was given a gift card for a coffee shop. I went to the coffee shop and tried it out. So we are ready for the podcast. We are coffeeed up and we are ready to go. Let's do this thing, Thomas.
Ladies and gentlemen, locked and loaded, David Carver is ready to go. Wow, that was pretty good. Well, David, another thing, before we get into this little game that was played this past weekend called the Super Bowl, the people of the Let's Get Ready to Football podcast have spoken, because there was a poll that was put on our Instagram via David, asking our audience if pizza was a finger food. And what did the people say, David?
A whopping. No. My assistant, I don't know who, someone is fired because someone did not get the percent in the picture that he screenshotted, and they only got part of it. 75%.
75.
Yes, it's a finger food. The people have spoken. The people are here. And Colt, we don't know this for a fact. This has not been confirmed, but as we can also not count this out. I think Colton missed this podcast because he did not want to talk about how pizza is a finger food.
I was thinking.
He did not want to concede.
He's gonna have to talk about that next week when he gets on.
Oh yeah, we're not forgetting. No. We're not forgetting.
We're holding him accountable, for sure.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Listeners, you have spoken. The Let's Get Ready to Football podcast is a Republican democracy. We let you guys speak on these issues, and they've spoken. And pizza is a finger food. So I'm sorry, Colton, but maybe next time. Maybe next time. But, David, there was a little game that was played this weekend called the Super Bowl.
Really?
Did you get to watch it?
I did.
And what were your thoughts? So listeners?
Well, I wish I hadn't watched it. No, I know a lot of people are saying it's a snooze fest. I actually really enjoyed the game. I'm not going to lie, listeners. I was not going to watch this game. I don't want to get into it. I don't like being that guy that blames refs or anything. But we know that Packers game had some, let's just say, weird stuff going on. And I kind of decided, you know, I just don't want to watch it. You know, I didn't come on here and complain because I don't want to be that person. I didn't let everyone know I wasn't going to watch it because I didn't want to do it. I was going to maybe just watch some highlights afterwards and find stuff to talk about. But my brother-in-law saved the day by planning a Super Bowl party. a Super Bowl party that, oddly enough, he left within 30 minutes of, which was interesting. But beyond that point, I actually really enjoyed the game. It wasn't the closest, most craziest game in the world. I didn't think it was a snooze fest, though. Part of it was just the history of it all, like just sitting there watching, knowing that you're watching this type of history. This is the second quarterback ever to win a Super Bowl for two different teams. Tom Brady just couldn't let Peyton Manning have even one Super Bowl record. The one Super Bowl record Peyton Manning had, and he had to take it away from him. He just was not going to let that stand. And so the history of it all was enjoyable. I did not bring stats to back this up, but I think for my money and what I've seen as an entire game, that was Tom Brady's best playoff game. Mm-hmm. I mean, not best playoff game, sorry, best Super Bowl game. Now, obviously, we know what he did in that Atlanta Falcons game in that last quarter and a half, which was blows this out of the water for sure. But as far as an entire complete game, he was amazing. He tore it up in the first half. He didn't have to do as much in the second half. But one of the craziest things was the turnaround from the week before, or the 2 weeks before. And I'm not going to bash him in the Packers game, but that Tom Brady was not Tom Brady in that Packers game. Yeah. You know, not just the three interceptions. He was just missing passes. He was just off. And then to turn out, and he was just on point in this game, in this Super Bowl game. I mean, usually in the Super Bowls, this is not supposed to be a Brady bashing. So I'm not trying, if it's coming off as Brady bashing, I'm not. I'm trying to lift up what he's done now, what he did last week, this week. You know, most of the games, I feel like it's not that he doesn't make the plays. It's not like he doesn't do what needs to be done. But, you know, usually it's like, okay, the defense stepped up here, or this receiver took over, or it's a little bit of a light game, and Tom Brady only had, you know, like the Rams Super Bowl, where he only had to play one drive of the game, and that was enough. That was not this game. 21-29, 201 yards, 3 touchdowns. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It was also fun as a football fan to watch the defense out there. It was super fun for me to watch the Buccaneers in the backfield every single play. Probably how a lot of Packers haters enjoyed watching the Packers game when the defense was in the backfield on every play. Patrick Mahomes with probably some of the best incomplete passes that you've ever seen in your life. I don't know how that happens.
Did you see the one where he was running around? He threw it in the corner of the end zone, and I thought the guy caught it. But you know which one I'm talking about, where he hit the pylon.
Yeah, when they flinged him, he was like wrapped up, and he just almost he didn't even why use a plant step when you can just use the defender's momentum. The defender swung him around, and then he didn't even throw the ball. He was just holding the ball, and then he just stopped holding the ball and let the defender's momentum throw the ball 40 yards. No, it was amazing. It was incredible. And then the very next play, he's running around for 5 minutes, and then he Superman dives. And this play, it looked incredible real life as he's barely on one toe, and he just flings the ball like a missile. It's not even like a soft pancake goat ball. No, it's a missile right into an incomplete pass, almost interception. But that's not the point. The ball was like 30 yards down the field, a missile. But then the more incredible part was you've now seen pictures that there's at least a split second when his foot was completely off the ground and he was full midair, laying down, supermanning it, and the ball was still in his hand and he flung that bad boy 30 yards. It's insane. The best worst game for a quarterback of all time. The best worst game. That's the only way to talk about Patrick Mahomes in that.
Yeah. Dude, is there a lot of Patrick Mahomes haters now, or people that are? I'm not in.
I've kind of avoided. Oh, it, to I was be honest. Say listeners. I've kind of avoided.
I am completely off social media. Really, don't do a lot of web searching for sports besides the couple minutes I research for this podcast. So I don't really know if there's a lot of hate going around, but I'm assuming because it's 2021, and. There's people out there that are calling Patrick Mahomes terrible and all these crazy things, but he did play. He played his heart out there. I think those incompletes, like you said, there was another time too where Patrick he threw it like 80 yards. I feel like I don't know if and it was a miss, but You just, man, that guy is a baller. He's got a heck of an arm. He wants to win. It's what you like to see out there is that guy. He's just risking it all for his team. Unfortunately, he came up a little short. They couldn't punch it in the end zone. But like you said, David, the Buccaneers' defense was fun to watch. Watching those guys in the backfield and watching the guys in the secondary covering Kelce and Tyreek Hill. And it was just really impressive to watch and to see also the front four get after that line of the Chiefs. But it was a very entertaining game, even though the score probably doesn't indicate that it was close. But yeah, another thing too, David, is last week we had a water bet. And this is the first time I've ever won a water bet, I think.
Thomas, congratulations. This reminds me of the early days for those of you that watch Undisputed. And, like, you just know that, like, Shannon Sharp owes Skip Bayless, like, 60-something Mountain Dews. And Skip Bayless just doesn't even care when he loses something because it just, you know, there's no reason not to bet. And that's kind of how I feel now. I believe, Thomas, you owed me three waters.
I think so, three.
So we're down to two waters for you.
I was just going to ask you if I could just subtract it from my debt, you know. I have to get.
Oh, yeah. We hadn't really talked about this. I kind of just assumed that's what
was happening. We got to bring it up with ours.
Do we both just have a water bet now? I don't know. I don't know. Now you have three and I have one. I'm not sure.
You know, we'd have to talk to the other partner of this podcast named Colton. But maybe we could make a negotiation.
Thomas, I think this is between you and me. Colton is out of sight, out of mind. No, just kidding. Colton's very instrumental to the podcast. But I just don't think we can leave this without a decision right now. Thomas.
Yeah.
Do you think we can trade this
water? Dude, I'm all for it.
All right. It's a trade.
I only have two now, right?
Until Colton comes on and complains next week. yeah, no, Thomas has two water bets. I have one. I have none. Oh no. I just cursed myself for the next water bet. Oh no. Thomas, I did have to ask you. So I didn't want to get into it too quick. I wanted to let you give your talk and about your opinion about the game. But I have looked on there just a little bit, and this is what I saw. I looked instantly after the game. And I saw there was basically two big groups. There was the Brady fans, the Patriots fans, the Buccaneers fans. Who knows what kind of fans these are? But obviously what we've seen, and this is a surprise. It's almost funny how some people still get surprised by this. But I don't know that I've ever met someone or have seen someone in the last week that has not been a lifelong Buccaneers fan. And of course, they're like, oh, I've been with them all the time. I've always been a fan of the Buccaneers. That's what they all say. But there's those guys that and I'm not going to try and put down what Tom Brady's done at all. Tom Brady is amazing. Tom Brady is fantastic. Tom Brady is the best quarterback of all time. Tom Brady proved it now. But there's those guys that feel that they need to urge Tom Brady even past that. Let's talk about every statistic that Tom Brady has ever done well. I've seen so many things, which this is a very impressive number. It's just that I saw about 70 people talking about it after the game. The Buccaneers had the worst winning percentage of any team in sports history, major sport history in the NFL. I mean, in America, the four major sports, they had the lowest winning percentage of any major sports team. Tom Brady comes one year and switch flips the script on that. But there's been stats like that just floating around like crazy. And then there's the other side. That I don't know if these guys are Chiefs fans. I don't know if these guys are Brady haters. I don't know if these guys are sports haters. Who knows where these guys come from? But these guys are the guys that are, it's fixed. Brady paid the refs. Oh, it's Brady's refs. The game doesn't count. Refs suck. All this sorts of stuff. Even some things that quite honestly went too far. Like I saw some things talking about there was a questionable call, and not really a questionable call, but an iffy close call on an interception and the first female ref to ref the Super Bowl, which I thought did fantastic. And congrats on her. She was the number one ranked line judge this year. So she absolutely earned that spot. And she called it an incomplete pass. And then I saw comments on that night of people saying, like, they knew that was an interception, but it was her first call, so they didn't want to overrule it, and just terrible things like that. And that's the reason why I got out of it. But Thomas, I wanted to hear your take. Did the reffing impact the game?
You know,
I'll reword that, because obviously the reffing impacted the game. Was the reffing wrong enough? Did the refs win the game for Tom Brady?
No, I don't think so. I think I can only think of really maybe one or two and questionable calls in the game. But I do not think that turned the tide of enabled the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to win or played any favorites or anything like that. I think the majority of the calls, I think, were right and correct. Now, I know that some of the Kansas City wide receivers were complaining about some of the defensive backs of Tampa Bay, you know, and holding a little bit or pass interference or getting there too soon. I do know that, but, you know, from the footage that I watched, I agree with the majority of the calls. So, really, you know, I think it affected the game, obviously, like you said, because reffing always does. But do I think that it heavily favored the Buccaneers? I do not.
I 100% agree. The reffing, I don't get the whiners. Like, I genuinely don't. Like I said, first off, I think the reffing game of the Packers game was questionable. It happens, guys. Like, it's part of the game. It sucks. I was so upset. That was a big part of why I was so upset after the Packers game, was because, and I don't want to say the reffing was, like, I don't think they fixed the game or anything. I was not one of those Packer fans that think that they were Tom Brady. I just thought the reffing overall for both sides was poor. And I don't think it was up to standard of an NFC championship game. I don't even think it was up to standard of an NFC championship game. I want to push back on the thought of what most people think of in these type of games. I don't think it's let them play. If it's a rule all season long, it should be a rule when it gets them to the Super Bowl. And I don't think the Packers game was ref that way. Moving on. I don't think the Chiefs game was even refed like letting them play. Like, I don't think that anything was overly aggressive. Obviously they let them argue a couple things, and I think that's fine in these type of games, because you know that's going to happen to a point. But, like, I know that some people are mad about that Mike Evans pass interference call saying that it was uncatchable. To those fans, I want you to close your eyes. I want you to imagine Mike Evans in your team's colors. Whatever team it is, Seahawks, Packers, Vikings, whatever team it is, 6'5", freak of nature, athletic Mike Evans. Now I want you to run that play back in your mind with Mike Evans in your colors. And I want you to imagine the ref saying that that ball that was 4 yards overthrown was not at all catchable by Mike Evans. There's no chance that if Mike Evans wasn't held, he wouldn't have been able to sprawl out with a 6'5 frame and make an acrobatic catch like we see players do all the time nowadays. And I want you to open your eyes, and I want you to turn off your bias and realize they not only made the right call, but they made the call you want to see. I don't, even if that was Davante Adams, I would be ticked if they didn't make that call. We see these guys make crazy catches. If it's within 10 yards, make it a pass interference. Like, if it's within 10 yards, make it a pass interference. Because we don't know the impact of how bad that slowing them down would be. And I don't want to discount athletes making freak plays like we see all the time nowadays. And I think the refs consistently make those type of calls. That was like 3 yards overthrown, if that. I think 99% of the time when I've seen those type of plays, they call it pass interference. But people don't like the call, and so it's all of a sudden it's a penalty. I don't think that the refs were bad. I obviously they missed calls because they're humans. Mm-hmm. But I thought the reffing was okay. I do have a message for both sides. If you're on the side thinking that they're doing it, move on. Like I said, as a Packer fan, I had to give me this message 2 weeks ago. Move on. Your argument isn't going to change the outcome of the game. So move on. And we've been in a lot of crazy situations with this Fail Mary and all sorts of stuff, Thomas. I've talked about for years this stupid Fail Mary. You know how many times they've gone back and changed that game? Even with replacement refs? They haven't done it. I've been waiting for them to do it. They haven't done it. I've heard Cowboys fans complain to me for years about a Dez catch. You know how many times they've gone back and thought about changing the Dez catch? They haven't. They haven't. Move on. It sucks. It sucks. I'm not even going to say you're wrong. Like, I disagree with you. I'm not going to say you're wrong. Move on. It's in the past. It sucks. It's in the past. Tom Brady fans, now to your side. Your quarterback's amazing. Yes. That doesn't mean every other quarterback in the world sucks. That doesn't mean Packer fans need to hear about how Aaron Rodgers sucks every day. That doesn't mean Chiefs fan need to hear about Patrick Mahomes sucking every day. That doesn't mean we need you up in the Seahawks business talking about Russell Wilson. Tom Brady's freaking amazing. If a Packers fan goes at you, yes, tell them that they're an idiot. And here's a life motto. Don't argue with idiots. Don't argue with idiots. If a Packers fan, if a Seahawks fan, if any fan at this point is coming at you trying to say their quarterback is better than yours, better than Tom Brady, they are an idiot and they refuse to accept the truth. Don't argue with
them. That is some good advice in like all aspects of life. Don't argue with idiots. See,
there we go, Thomas. Let's change this. Let's change the name of the podcast.
Don't argue with idiots podcast. That's awesome. That is awesome. Not only are we a football podcast, we're also an inspirational podcast as well.
Yes. Well, we are two of the best motivational speakers on the planet. Highly ranked. I will want to say, and like I said, I have very strictly stayed out of the media besides Packers news. But in response to your comment, your question about people going at Patrick Mahomes, I saw some Brady fans going at Patrick Mahomes, but I know that a lot of people were blaming it also on the injuries and the offensive line, and rightfully so, the offensive line and the drop passes and stuff. And I have looked at Packers news because I'm hoping that Packer fans haven't been really big going off about it. So I'm sure that they are, but like in Packers circles, like on Bleacher Report Packers, there's no talking about Tom Brady in there, really. But I know that there's some – I've seen some Packer posts complaining about the fact that Aaron Rodgers is seen as having such a small or weak supporting cast that everyone mocked him for not drafting a receiver, yet he statistically outplayed. And I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm just saying that this is some of the stuff I've seen. He statistically outplayed Patrick Mahomes, even though he has every weapon in the world, and there's been a lot of posts talking about everyone still babying Patrick Mahomes. And so I don't think there's been that hate. I hope there hasn't, because Patrick Mahomes is still great. Surprising to most people, one game doesn't change his entire career outlook. He's still fantastic. And so I hope that there hasn't been too many people change their opinion about Patrick Mahomes. Yeah,
dude, I hope not. He's a heck of a player. He's young, and he's going to do a lot of good things in the league. But you know, as some of these things, David, that maybe a lot of people would argue about the reffing and stuff. One thing that they can't argue about is some of the NFL awards that were handed out this past weekend. So a bunch of awards: Offensive Rookie of the Year, MVP. Defensive Player of the Year, a bunch of awards, Man of the Year were given out before the Super Bowl. So, David, is there any – let's just start off with the bang. So, David, MVP Aaron Rodgers was awarded. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are exactly what the votes were. I think the votes were 44 Rodgers or something like that, and then like 4 Josh Allen and like 2 Patrick Mahomes, and I think that's the way it should have been. If anyone disagrees with that, go back and rewatch Packer games because he was amazing this year. Even adds to the story that, like I said, everyone talked about all year long about how stupid they were for not adding another offensive weapon. I mean, it was just amazing. It's statistically, it's not even a question. I think this was I don't even know that you could argue against this statistically, but I think it was the best season ever. Statistically wise, for sure, but like overall, also, he seemed to have a lot of fun. And I don't know if you saw his acceptance speech, Thomas, but I would like to congratulate him on being engaged also. Like, he obviously listens.
Yeah,
he said in his acceptance speech that he's engaged. Came out like the next day that he's engaged to Shailene Woodley, the actress from Divergent. The Divergent series. Have you seen that? Well, then you don't know who she is. Have you seen Fault in Our Stars, Thomas? I have also not seen that, but I know that those are the two movies that I know that she's in. I'm sure that she's in others, and I just haven't seen them. I have seen Divergent. She was fine in that. But now this half football movie. Podcast, half engagement podcast, movie. And half movie podcast, yes. Three halves make up one full show.
Dude, I totally agree with you. There was no doubt that MVP had to go to Aaron Rodgers. In my mind, hands down, 100%, Aaron Rodgers, there's no question that he deserved it. Josh Allen, I know there's people that made the argument for Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, but in my mind, not even a question. And you think about all the things, too, that he had to face coming into this year with all the, of course, the hate from people who hate him every single year, but also the people that added on to that with the Jordan Love. Draft pick and all the scrutiny that he faced and how he was able just to not even really get swayed by that or anything like that. He remained calm. He went out and balled out every single game. I think he had his highest QBR rating his career. Second highest. Fewest at 48 touchdowns, only 5 picks. I mean, the player Aaron Rodgers is amazing, and he definitely deserved this award.
A quick message to the haters of Aaron Rodgers. Shut up and go hide in a hole. I don't know what – this is what I've heard for years. It is the weirdest thing, and I will give some respect to the possibility of the, like, complete switch of people. You know what I mean? Like, you have all the people that hate Aaron Rodgers that – have always talked about how much they hate Aaron Rodgers, that as soon as Jordan Love was drafted, suddenly they disappeared. Because I've heard how much Aaron Rodgers sucks and how he's done and how he needs to retire and how he's the worst quarterback. I mean, I've heard draft analysts talk about how we need to draft a quarterback of the future for years. And yet, as soon as we do, the Packers are the dumbest team in NFL history. And all of a sudden, I didn't hear any Aaron Rodgers hate. I was looking for it. I was listening for it. But all I heard is the Packers are dumb for drafting Jordan Love. All of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers emerges. And then these people get even louder. The Packers are dumb for drafting Jordan Love. They're dumb. They're dumb. They're dumb. They're dumb. They're dumb. Then all of a sudden, Aaron Rodgers loses. And all of a sudden, those people dug a hole and hid. And all the people that have been waiting to talk about how bad Aaron Rodgers sucks must have emerged back up. There is no way that there has not been the giant majority of people that in the last year have gone from hating Aaron Rodgers and talking about how bad he sucked to talking about how bad the Packers suck for drafting Jordan Love to now talking again about how bad Aaron Rodgers sucks because, you know, he's a choke. And I want to say one thing. Yes, Aaron Rodgers is 1-3 in NFC Championship games. Guess what? He wasn't the favorite in 3 of them. The only one he's been the favorite in was this last one against Tampa Bay. So get out of here. Go away. I don't even want to hear you talk anymore. I'm just so sick of Aaron Rodgers being the worst quarterback on the planet because he isn't Tom Brady. Thomas, do you know how many people have won 2 Super Bowls in the salary cap era?
I would say 2 or 3. 7.
A little more than that. But we have John Elway. John Elway is the closest thing to what you said to looking at Aaron Rodgers and saying Aaron should win. Because, but John Elway still had a good defense. He still had Terrell Davis. He still had Shannon Sharp. But then after that, you have Tom Brady. Exclude him. Tom Brady's in a tier of his own. Then you have Eli Manning, who, not take any credit away from Eli Manning, not take any credit away from any of these guys, but just to point at what Aaron Rodgers does not have. Eli Manning, great supporting cast, amazing defense. Both Super Bowl runs. Great run game, everything. And he had a little bit of a magic run. We know that too. Now, Big Ben, 100% carried by the great defense and run game in that first Super Bowl. He was not the Hall of Fame quarterback in that first Super Bowl. Second one, he was closer, and he earned that. I'm not going to say he has. I'm not saying any of these guys haven't earned it. I'm not trying to throw hate. But so we have those guys, and then there's one other one. Oh, no. Who's the loser that forgot this? There's one other one. Oh, Peyton Manning, obviously. Peyton Manning, obviously in the first one, fantastic. Second one, dude, that wasn't Peyton Manning. That was the shell of Peyton Manning, and we all know that. That defense won that Super Bowl. Yeah. My point is not to say that any of these guys suck or any of these guys are bad, but great quarterbacks in the salary cap era do not win multiple Super Bowls. Great teams do. And the Packers, over the course of Aaron Rodgers' career, have not had a great team. Since they won the Super Bowl in 2010, the only time they've had a top 15 defense was not this year, but last year when they went to the NFC Championship and lost to the 49ers. And that, even then, it was like 12th. Every other time, like Aaron Rodgers, if you average out all of his defense, even including the year when they won the Super Bowl and stuff, his defense is average, like ranked 25th. They showed – I saw a stat the other day. The special teams in the last five seasons averaged 30th. Aaron Rodgers – teams – quarterbacks do not win Super Bowls in the salary cap era, multiple. Tom Brady has changed the standard, and it shouldn't be because Tom Brady is in a different world. So I just want to throw that out there. I got my rant out on Aaron Rodgers. I told you guys to expect it, to coffee it up. But – I'm tired. I don't even want to listen to that garbage.
Dude, that was great. We need a, you know how we have a, we're in the process or maybe, of creating a jingle for our water beds. We need to create a jingle for your rants. Just like so that.
Yes, you do. Another great rant.
That was great. We'll have that installed next week on the podcast. But you're the one that has to press the button because you're the only one that knows when it's going to go off.
Oh, I don't know when it's going to go off. I'm going to tell you guys, there's about 99% of the time. I come into every episode. No, I don't want to say every episode, but a lot of episodes with like, okay, I know I might rant about this one thing. And then I end up talking and I'm like, okay, I know I can't go on for 5 minutes here. I know we don't have time in the podcast. And then I just get fired up. I did not, what just happened was completely unplanned. I started that thinking I was only going to talk about how Aaron Rodgers got so much hate in the last year. But we were on a roll and we went for it, Thomas.
Well, please don't ever stop because that is literally what makes this podcast this podcast. I was literally just thinking about while you were in the middle of the rant that really, like, if you take our conversation as a podcast, us three, when we were in high school, basically this is what we did in high school and what we've done, like, on Marco Polo, except we're just broadcasting it on Anchor and putting it out there in a podcast form. But...
Yeah, pretty much every day we got together. We talked a little bit about football. Thomas and Golden tried to say something. I got going, talked for about half the day. And then we went home and started it all over again.
No, keep it up, though, dude. It makes this podcast great. And too bad Colton isn't here to throw some jabs because his Justin Jefferson didn't win Offensive Rookie of the Year. Justin Herbert did. David, what's
your thought? You did not. Real quick, yes. I did forget something, Thomas. This is not going to be a rant. Don't worry. I put up polls after everyone won. I gave you guys a chance to vote on how much you agreed. 100% of the voters agreed with Aaron Rodgers for MVP. 75% said Justin Herbert. did deserve the Offensive Rookie of the Year. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. We know that I agree. I definitely agree. Thomas, what are your
thoughts? Oh, no question. Justin Herbert deserved this. We don't have our friend Colton on here to argue for the case of Justin Jefferson, which I also want to say, I put Justin Jefferson as one of my top wide receivers going into the draft last year. I'm just putting that out there. And I remember getting mocked by both of you guys.
You definitely did. You definitely did. It's something that I was never going to bring up because everyone – I don't want to say everyone knows, but I have the draft – my draft page that I was running at the time last year. And I didn't hate Justin Jefferson. I was not someone that thought that he was undraftable or something. But I definitely saw him as like a second-round pick, easy, and definitely not even close to CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy. And so, yes, Colton – will never admit that.
But that, he still didn't deserve the Offensive Rookie of the Year award, in my opinion, because of the greatness that is Justin Herbert. Really, the Los Angeles Chargers, they were a great team. I don't know how they lost so many games this year besides it was just bad coaching, execution in certain parts of the game, because that was a very talented team that didn't win a lot of games. But Justin Herbert played great. You know, he threw over 4,000 yards, 31 touchdowns, and really one of the few bright spots on that team. And man, I think people really appreciate his arm strength and his ability to huck the ball down the field. And I think a lot of people coming from that Oregon offense of a lot of horizontal passing, a lot of people weren't giving him the benefit of his arm. And he's got a strong arm. I think he proved all his doubters wrong.
Yeah. And the other thing, you're not going to toot your horn again because you've already talked about this, but you were the only one of the three of us that had Justin Herbert number one, which – is looking pretty good right now. I completely agree exactly with your analysis. And that's one of the things I brought up last year. I did have Justin Herbert third. I did have him behind Tua and Burrow. But I did have him as like a top 10 pick. I'm an Oregon fan. So I guess my bias maybe ensured the fact that there was no way I was going to be one of the haters on him. I don't know. But that's one of the things I brought up is I don't think that the Oregon offense in general maximized his talent. You know, they didn't let him run a lot. They wanted him to stay in the pocket. They did a lot of short passes. And it really, you know, Oregon fans that saw moments of it, I think knew what his potential was. But a lot of the haters, I just don't think saw that. I think a lot of the haters just didn't believe in that, in his talent. And I think most of it was because of that Oregon
offense. A lot of it, too, has a lot to do with his like demeanor and how he approaches the game. He's a quiet professional. He's not one of these guys that are very into their ego. And so, I don't know. I think a lot of people just like, he has a baby face. He's a young kid. He's, you know, let's discount him. And then he shows up on the Chargers team and just lights it up. And people can see that arm strength that he has and his ability to run. And also his competitiveness and that leadership factor that he has, which is huge. Not all leaders have to be the loudmouth person, you know, getting the spotlight. You can be the guy that just leads by example, and then who you want to be the face of your organization if you're the Chargers. But
yeah, and we know that we're not saying anything that not everybody in the world knows, but. It's 100% hypocritical anytime anyone brings up the leadership with these quarterbacks, because you get the Justin Herberts out there and everyone hates him because he maybe isn't the vocal screamer leader out there. But then Everyone loves Russell Wilson. Everyone loves Russell Wilson's leadership. Everyone hates Aaron Rodgers, you know, because Aaron Rodgers will, I don't know if you know this, Thomas, but he is an outraged person because occasionally when a wide receiver messes up a route, he'll lift up an arm and be like, what the heck? And then he'll talk to him. I've never once, I watch been a Packers fan my entire life. I've been an Aaron Rodgers fan his entire career. I watched since the Brett Favre days, so I have seen every bit of Aaron Rodgers' career. I have never once seen him go off on a receiver or coach or anything. Now, obviously, I've seen him like do like a quick yell, like "Come on!" or "Cut it out!" or something like that. But like, nothing like a go off on the guy. Always an instant reaction. But Tom Brady, we know that we've seen the. And I'm not picking on Tom Brady. I don't want to get the Tom Brady haters. I'm a Tom Brady stan now. I'm converted. And so I'm not saying Tom Brady does anything wrong. I'm saying that people need to get off Aaron Rodgers again. But we have Tom Brady screaming at guys, coaches, multiple times in his career. And, of course, he's passionate. He cares about winning more than anything. Cam Newton does something, and Cam Newton is terrible. Absolutely the worst. And so no matter what, if these people don't like quarterbacks, they just find ways to not like them. And we know this with the draft as well. Every year there's a guy that the media just gets on board that he just sucks. He's terrible. And I don't know where it comes from. DK Metcalf was the one the year before who was an absolute freak. Usually it's the freaks. And I don't understand why it's the freaks that get all the hate. We get freaking Justin Herbert, who's an animal. He sucks. DK Metcalf, the scariest person on the planet, maybe. He sucks. The year before that, it was Josh Allen. He sucks. Like, I don't know where it comes from, but Justin Herbert unfortunately got it last year. But he is a heck of a player.
He is. A couple other awards that came out, David, was Defensive Player of the Year. That went to the one-man wrecking ball, Aaron Donald. Dude, what were your thoughts about this award?
Well, Thomas, first off, I have to ask, do you agree with this reward?
You know, I do. I think a couple weeks ago I picked TJ Watt to win this. I predict it. But at the same time, I'm okay with this because Aaron Donald is probably, if not, there's only a few players that I would rank on the D-line that are more dominant than he is, or as dominant as he is. That would be like Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White, J.J. Watt. These are the only players, he and Aaron Donald with those guys, that I think have the ability to just, no matter where they're put, they're going to manhandle the offensive linemen and get to the quarterback. And what's so impressive about Aaron Donald is he's not a freak. Primarily, I mean, he's got a low center of gravity. He's nimble. He has quick arms. But, man, he just wrecks whoever he's going up against, no matter if they have more power or strength than him. And so I'm totally okay with it.
Yeah, so, Tom,
yes.
You know what's about to come. This was my one planned rant. I'm going to try and make it as quick as possible. It's not going to be a real rant. 100% of our fans also agreed. I'll put that out there. Guys, we got to get past our feelings. I went down the rabbit hole this week because everyone knows I've been thinking Aaron Donald wins it. But I decided, you know what? I've been saying this about Aaron Donald without really getting into depth. And I decided I was going to do some research. And I'm going to tell you guys, I sought out on this project and I was going to be like, I'm going to look at every single impactful nose tackle, or not nose tackle, defensive tackle from 2000 on. And I'm going to look at every single MVP winning defensive end or edge rushing pass rusher from 2000 on. And I'm going to tell you guys something. I went all the way back by the end of this to the start of 1982 when the sack first started being counted as a stat. So I think we have the numbers here. TJ Watt. There has been 14 edge rushers to win the MVP since 1982. TJ Watt finished this year with 15 sacks, 23 tackles for loss, 41 QB hits, 2 forced fumbles, 53 tackles. Now, some of these numbers are not going to be out of 14. The reason is because I went back so far that some of these things were not stats in 1982. Tackle for losses were not a stat in 1982. QB hits were not a stat in 1982. So I'm not going to explain it on everyone. Just know that if it's less numbers. This is where, if TJ Watt had won Defensive Player of the Year, this is where he would rank in each of these categories. He would rank 10th of 14 in sacks, 5th of 9 in tackles for loss, 4th of 7 in QB hits, and 13 of 13 in forced fumbles, so last in forced fumbles, and 12 of 13 in tackles. If you compare his numbers to average, those players average 17.3 sacks. He only had 15 sacks. They averaged 23 tackles for loss. He did have 23 tackles for loss, but if we look in a little bit more depth, two of those years were the first year the tackle for loss were created, and we're going to get more into why those guys may have missed it, but we're not. Let's just say that those guys weren't pure edge rushers. QB hits. He got – this is his best category. And he – again, this was – there was a couple low numbers the very first years it was involved. I don't know if it just happened to be the players on this one. The last one, I'm comfortable that it's the players. But I don't know if it just happened to be the players or if it was like they didn't count them the same the first couple years or you know what I mean? Because it was like in the 20s, and then after the first two, all of them were in the 30s and above. And so I don't know exactly what happened. But the average is 35.7. He had 41. Now, this is when it gets really bad. Forced fumbles, he had 2. The average is 5.3. And tackles, he was the average. He had 53, and the average was 77. There is one single player of those 14 that you can look at and compare to T.J. Watt and say T.J. Watt, I want to say for sure had a better season than them, but either had a close or a better season than them. Like it was close. The only player that's close. Every other player had a clear-cut better season than him. There was only four of them that had less sacks than him, and we'll get to those guys in a minute. That guy was Khalil Mack in 2016. I have no idea how Khalil Mack in 2016 won him Defensive Player of the Year. I think a lot of us were confused about it. On how he won over Von Miller that year. But he had 11 sacks, 14 tackles for loss, 26 QB hits, 5 forced fumbles, and then 73 tackles. So, I mean, he had 3 more forced fumbles in him and 20 more tackles in him, but everything else he kind of lost handedly to T.J. Watt. So T.J. Watt would have been one of the worst pass rushers, edge players ever to win the Defensive Player of the Year award since 1982. Since the sack has been a thing, he would have been one of the worst players ever. Going back all the way to 1982, I want to remind you guys something. This is going to be a shock. The game teams pass more today than they did in 1982. This prevents more opportunities for sacks. So, like, this is very mind-blowing. Now, let's get to how impressive Aaron Donald is. I'm going to just rattle off this list. These are the players I looked at. I tried to look at every single impactful player, every single Hall of Famer, every single player that's won Defensive Player of the Year, and every single like major all-pro type player since 1982. I got Kenny Clark, DeForest Buckner, Ndamukong Suh, Fletcher Cox, Geno Atkins, Grady Jarrett, Akeem Hicks, Eric Armstead, Jarrell Casey, William Perry, Bryant Young, Haloti Ngata, Brandon Williams, Randy White, Richard Seymour, and Dan the Man Hampton. I looked at stats for 147 seasons between those guys. Do you know how many seasons of those 147 seasons they had 13 and a half sacks or more? Zero. Zero. It combined, there was only 15 of those 147 seasons that a player even had 10 sacks. Going to his 14 tackles for loss, there was only 18 seasons in those seasons. And now, again, I get that's a cheap number because, like I already said, tackles for loss did not exist that entire way. But there's only 18 that had that matched his tackle for loss numbers. That leads us to the guys that did. There is exactly 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players, 7 interior defensive linemen ever that have had a season ever like Aaron Donald. Keith Miller, Warren Sapp, Calais Campbell, Chris Jones, Dan Stubblefield, Cortez Kennedy, Leroy Glover, and John Randall. So between those guys, I looked at, if you throw those guys into the mix, there's 236 now seasons that I had now looked at. Do you know how many seasons? Do you know how many seasons there's a combined for having more sacks than Aaron Donald did this year?
Eight.
And I will tell you, there's only one player besides Aaron Donald that has ever done it twice. And that is Warren Sapp. Warren Sapp's done it four times. Warren Sapp is the only other player that did it twice. Keith Millard, when he did it, he won Defensive Player of the Year. Dan Stubblefield, when he did it, he won Defensive Player of the Year. Leroy Glover, when he did it, he won Defensive Player of the Year. When John Randall did it, he won Defensive Player of the Year. The only three players that did it without winning Defensive Player of the Year was Cortez Kennedy in 2000. That was the year Ray Lewis won the Defensive Player of the Year. When Ray Lewis had one of the best defensive seasons of all time. Chris Jones did it in 2018. Calais Campbell did it in 2017. Guess how many times? Guess who they lost the Defensive Player of the Year to? Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
Aaron Donald outproducing both of them. And so total, we have 236 seasons. Only 8 seasons did they produce more sacks than him. Only 19 seasons did they produce more tackles for loss than him. So he would have had one of the best defensive seasons for an interior defensive lineman ever. Now, you may be looking at these stats wondering, well, did I cheat maybe a little bit and like count some players to like, you know, maybe that aren't really interior defensive linemen as, you know, I counted interior defensive linemen as edge rushers. Well, no, because I kind of cheated, to be honest. I kind of cheated towards TJ Watt. You know why? John Randall played both defensive end and defensive tackle, but I counted him. Let's go to the linebackers. I talked about how there were some players that by position didn't get as many tackles for losses. TJ Watt didn't get as many sacks as him. Terrell Suggs, he finished his year on the edge rusher, and he did play edge rusher at times. But when he won that Defensive Player of the Year, he was a stand-up linebacker. But I counted him. He had less sacks than him. He had less tackles for loss than him. So it affected all those stats. But I counted him because I wanted to be I wanted it to be so fair that it leaned bias towards TJ Watt. So there's this claim going around. This is the last little point. There's the claim going around that, like, oh, TJ Watt didn't get it because of big name. You know, Aaron Donald won it just because he has a big name. Yeah. It's the exact opposite. Aaron Donald won it, or the only reason they didn't want Aaron Donald to win it is because of he's made this look so normal. Like I said, we have 236 seasons. Only 8 seasons, or in those 236 seasons, sorry, only 25 seasons of those interior defensive linemen have had 10 sacks or more. Looking at every single Hall of Fame or impactful defensive tackle since the beginning of sacks being created in the last 40 years, we have 25 seasons of 10 sacks or more. Aaron Donald in 7 seasons has 5. We have only 19 seasons of that many tackle for losses. Aaron Donald in 7 seasons has 6. We have only 8 seasons. And we only have 8 seasons, but 4 of those seasons belong to Warren Sapp. So if you exclude Warren Sapp, in 223 seasons of an impactful defensive lineman, not named Warren Sapp or not named Aaron Donald, we only have 4 seasons of 13.5 sacks or more. Aaron Donald in 7 seasons has 2. Aaron Donald in 7 seasons has 2. It is insane. I'm not even going to get into this. Most of those guys that did reach his sack and tackle for loss record at points in the career, the only ones that actually did both was Calais Campbell. Was Calais Campbell and Leroy Glover and John Randall. He's the only one. Those are the only three that did both. Even Warren Sapp never reached that tackle for loss total and sack season in the same season. Mic drop. Aaron Donald was Defensive Player of the Year. It's not a debate. End the debate. Do some research next time. I'm sorry you don't like Aaron Donald. I'm sorry you're a big fan of TJ Watt, whatever the reason is. He just wasn't it this year. He just was not the defensive player of the year this year. He's a great player.
And ladies he was not and the gentlemen, that is why David Carver is going to be the general manager of the Green Bay Packers in about 10 years. It's just for the that little rant that you just listened to. He is dedicated. I can't believe you looked at all those, all those stats, David. That is dedicated.
I sent you guys the picture. I have about 4 pages of notes, completely filled of notes. And that's not even going to go into my screenshots of stats.
Yeah, I did see those notes. Listeners, maybe we can post this like on the social media. But David, he is, you know, he did his work. I mean, he has papers and with notes scribbled all over it with stats. So this is not a joke. He's not making this stuff up. He did the hard work of going in and or going online and actually writing all this stuff down too, and that's why he's one of the best statisticians in the game. But David, is there any other awards that do you think stood out to you or that you want to talk about?
I'll quickly go through what the voters had. Defensive rookie of the year, 75% yep, said it was right. Thomas, do you agree? I agree. Derrick Henry, 60% said it was right, which I thought was very low. I don't know that I completely agree, but I'm okay with it.
Yep. No,
comeback
no
player
doubt.
Of the year, 100% said Alex Smith. And then the only one that you guys blatantly disagreed yes. with, coach of the year. Only 25% said yes. They agree. And this is the only one I disagree
yeah.
with. It sounds
yeah,
like you
I kind of
disagree
with that. I just think.
Thomas. Go ahead.
I think you just had a lot of different coaches that did better than the Cleveland Browns and Kevin Stefanski. I think Matt LaFleur is up there. I think you could put, although he went out and got Brady and he got all these big names, you could put Bruce Arians up there for, you know, putting this team together in just a season and then getting to the Super Bowl and winning it. Obviously, this award came out before he won it, but I just think there were some other candidates. What's the Bills head coach? Sean McDermott. I think there's just a lot of
McDermott.
I think there were some options that I think were better than – and I like Kevin Stefanski. I don't want – if he's a listener of the show, which I know most teams are, most head coaches are. Kevin, you're doing a great job. I think you're a great guy. You did a great job with the Cleveland Browns. Hopefully the future's bright for you. But I just was – maybe there was some other options that I thought did a better job. So – but nothing horrible.
Yeah, I agree with you. We all understand why he got this award, but ultimately he got this award in part because the Browns have sucked for so long. And I just don't think it's fair to give a guy coach of the year
right.
just because the previous coaches have sucked so bad. I just don't think that's fair. At the end of the day, we all know the Browns are one of the most talented teams in the NFL. The Packers are... We're just looking at three different situations. The Packers have one of the most talented teams in the NFL. In 1 year, they went from not making the playoffs for 2 years, and Matt LaFleur was hired and brought them 13-3 to win the division last year, and he didn't win Coach of the Year. Sean McDermott, who would have been one of my two favorites. I have two main options this year, but Sean McDermott, same situation. They made the playoffs last year, but similar situation. He took a very talented team, but he took them even further, not further in the playoffs, but I mean further in the regular season because it is a regular season award. In the playoffs too. I said that not like I meant it, but I want to make sure you guys understand I'm not even talking about the playoffs. I'm talking about the regular season. He took them better to a better record, a talented team to an even better record, and he didn't win it. And then you have, like you said, Bruce Arians, who has one of the more talented teams in the NFL. And even though they didn't win their division, right. they were even a better wild card seed than the Browns and had an even better record than the Browns. And so, in my opinion, those three not winning the award and Bruce Arians not even being a candidate for the award, I think proves like why exactly why he shouldn't win. I think that like sets the precedent for him not winning the award. In my opinion, taking one of the most talented teams in the NFL to the playoffs just because the previous regime wasn't good enough at doing it has not given guys coaches of the year in the past. And I don't think it was fair to do it now. But I think it should have been between Sean McDermott. If you were going to take a candidate like that, it should have been Sean McDermott or Andy Reid, to be honest. Like, you have, I don't think people realize, like, there's been no talk of Super Bowl hangover this year. There was no talk of that at all this year. They went 15-1. There's always the talk about Super Bowl hangover. There's always the talk about how every team's gunning for. You're going to get every team's best and all this stuff. And right. They just went out and danced their way to 15-1. And so I wouldn't have been opposed to him getting that either. But yeah. And a quick congratulations to you, Thomas, and your Russell Wilson, Walter Payton Man of the Year Award winner. What feels does good. It feel like to have a Seahawks Russell player win Wilson, that award? Russell
Wilson, he's a good guy. He does a lot of things for the Seattle community. And he's also just a great I think he's a big leader as far as his faith. And it's just really cool to see him win. I love Russell Wilson. Although, this is a little side note, which maybe we'll talk about next week. We'll do some brainstorming on what segments we need to talk about next week. But he apparently went off on his offensive lineman today. So maybe we'll have that. We can talk about that next week.
Oh, Thomas.
What's that?
Thomas, I have bad news for you.
Yes.
You know, we talk a lot about how we don't plan things. Thomas, I was planning on bringing this up. I was going to drop the bomb on you. And this is poor timing because I didn't want to do it right after calling him the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Russell Wilson's a great, from everything I know about him, a great stand-up guy, a fantastic player. But yeah, I have some quotes here. So first we have, on Russell Wilson being more involved in personnel decisions, this came out this morning, he was quoted saying, "I think that dialogue should happen more often," implying that he wants to be involved in those decisions more often. He talked about how he thinks the Seahawks have definitely been getting trade offers for him. And then the last thing he said was that's been quoted. I don't want to say it's the last thing he said, but the last thing that was quoted was there was the reports that he and his team is kind of getting fed up with getting hit too much. And so they asked him, like, "Are you frustrated with the Seahawks?" And he responded, "I'm frustrated with getting hit too much." And so that led me, you know, being the great, great friend that I am, to make this as our weekly poll. Should Russell Wilson pull a Deshaun Watson and try to get out of Seattle? 100% of the voters said yes. Thomas, oh no, 100% of the voters. If it makes you feel better, I did post it a little late. We have three voters.
A little bit better.
So, and for full disclosure, one of them is my sister. So, I did not talk to her about it. I did not tell her what to vote, but she did vote yes. So, Thomas, I got to hear your thoughts on it. You were starting in, but I had to interrupt.
No, and I appreciate
that. And drop the bombshell that this was planned.
No, I'm glad you brought it up, really, in all honesty, because this is something that, although I'm happy that Russell Wilson won the Man of the Year award, and as good as I think he is, an example he is to his community, and I think the way that he displays his faith is very, very cool. I will say there's a little this based on just principle alone, I never like it when the players of any league, NBA, NFL, MLB, get out of the role of the team or their employment and start acting like they are in the general manager's shoes or the coach's shoes. Just the base on principle, I really don't like that. Just because you're making millions and you have a powerful voice and culture doesn't mean that you don't submit to authority. So that's basically based on principle alone. I hate when that kind of stuff happens. Obviously, there's things like with Deshaun Watson where it gets a little bit more personal, and there's there's bad management that could lead you to leave. But I do not support the role of Russell Wilson, basically becoming the general manager, head coach, and the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. I think that's not his role. His role is to go out there and throw the ball and ball out like he does every year. And I think there's a trend in professional sports that we've probably seen the last 10 years where it's becoming more, the athletes are becoming more entitled. And there's a lot of different factors why that is, but I would say I agree with the statement that he's getting hit too much. He is getting hit way too much. And as a fan of the Seattle Seahawks, we need to do a better job of protecting him. He can have those complaints. I'm totally okay with those complaints. I guess the thing that I'm not okay with is his desire or his statement on the ability to be the head coach and the general manager. I think it's okay to voice your opinion and your complaint, especially when you have a close relationship with John Snyder and Pete Carroll, but in no way, shape, or form do I think that he has the final say in how they should build that team. I think John Snyder's done a great job in the past. Pete Carroll's done a great job in the past. I'm very confident in them. And yeah, offensive line is a real need, and hopefully we can go address that this offseason. But that's my thoughts.
Thomas. I pretty much agree with you. I agree. I don't like that the players want – it's just – that's not their job. It's like you said, that's just not their job. And that's not – I don't want that to be their job. I don't think it helps them because, you know, at the end of the day, why Russell Wilson wants to win, if Russell Wilson's made a GM, you know what else Russell Wilson wants? It's a job for him. He wants – players that are going to help him get that next paycheck, and that's just the real of it. Like, yes, they want to win, but they also want that money. And so I just think there's a conflict of interest. Also, you have situations like in all honesty and in all genuality, like whether you agree with the Jordan Love decision or not, at some point the Packers do need to move on from Aaron Rodgers. And if Aaron Rodgers or players like that are making those decisions, again, it's just a conflict of interest. And then you have the weird spot of eventually they aren't good enough to be that anymore. And so then I think you create a problem at the end of their career where they still think that they're that, but they're not that powerful anymore. And you now have an awkward situation where you're like, you're not quite good enough that I care about you enough to let you make these decisions. And so I'm with you. I agree with him that he does need to get hit less. I don't like him calling out his teammates and or anything like that in the media, to be honest. I love Russell Wilson, a great stand-up guy. There's nothing about his character. My opinion of him is not changing, but I do think this was a mistake by him, which – I know that most people aren't like me, and most people you actually do make. And so I'll let them live with it. But yeah, it kind of.
Yeah, I do not love it either.
I don't love it, to be honest. But I don't get why do people think that it's these type of things where it gets me confused. And Thomas, we've talked about this a little bit before personally off the podcast. But like, why does the general public feel like they are on the side of the players and they're fighting against the man?
I never got that.
I don't understand it. Like, I think there's some – I'm going to tell you a quick story about Walmart. I used to work at Walmart, Thomas. I know you know this. As a oil change – I was an auto tech. I changed oil. There was a guy that was a young guy, a couple years – at the time I was 22, 21 – and he was a couple years younger than me. He was 19 or 20. And he had been working at Walmart for about 3 months. It was his first real job outside of high school. He was working full time. And he worked for about 3 months, and he worked harder than a lot of the people out there because, not want to say because of anything, but he worked harder. And he was constantly frustrated and ticked off, and to the point of sometimes he would throw tires and stuff when he got pissed off because he didn't feel like he was being treated fairly because he worked harder than all these guys that have been working there for 10 years, but he didn't get the same treatment as the guys that have been working there for 10 years. Yeah. I'm sure that many of us can relate to this type of situation. Yep. You know how many times he went off on the boss? Never, because he needed the job. And so I think that there's a little piece of us that are like, yeah, go off on your boss. We want Russell Wilson to be the boss because I want to be the boss at my job. I got news for you guys. The fact that Russell Wilson potentially has that kind of power exactly proves why Russell Wilson is the man that most of America is fighting against. Like, the players we're not fighting against with the people against the billionaire athletes. Those guys are all millionaires. They're the men that we're usually fighting against. Everyone's talked about all these hedge fund owners and stuff in this last couple of weeks with GameStop, and I know that there's probably some billionaires out there. But those hedge fund managers that people think that they stuck it to, that's the man. That's the Russell Wilsons of the world. Like, the billionaire athletes are the mans that we don't even get to worry about because they're so far – they're the man's man. And so it's always been interesting to me that players, people, the general public sides on the sides of players so often with this because it's like it's not Russell Wilson's job. And quite honestly, I don't think – like, I know everyone loves Let Russ Cook, and that was fun. Let's not forget about the end of Let Russ Cook when Russell Wilson started throwing interceptions. And I don't think Russell Wilson's a bad player. But I think Russell Wilson, this is not going to be a surprise to anybody. Russell Wilson's a little bit of a wild card. He's a little bit of a gunslinger. That gunslinger mentality. He wants the big play every play. That's one of the reasons why he gets hit. Yes, the offensive lineman in Seattle has always sucked since he's been there. But there's a lot of times when it's like, okay, if you would take a three-step drop and get the ball out of there, you're fine. But you have to take a three-step drop, swing to the right, turn around, do a front flip, go underneath the offensive lineman, back up, truck somebody, and then fling the ball 40 yards down the field. You know, if he wouldn't – you know, and I'm not saying it's all on Russell Wilson, but I don't know that this let Russ Cook idea – would be as great for winning as I think some people think.
A lot of it too has to do exactly with what you just said about Russell Wilson just standing in the pocket. He never ever takes rarely he takes that three-step drop back, quick slant pass, you know, on his second read or first read. He's always hanging out in there, wanting the home run, which I love that, you know, I like Seattle scoring home run touchdowns, but it will lead you to get hit quite often. And you know, he also had Brian Schottenheimer, who was a very creative offensive play caller, you know, who I assume would have had routes and different plays drawn up to where he could have got that ball out a little quicker, but you know, we'll see. I will also comment to David about this whole all the fans siding with the players. I think a lot of it has to do too with just like how politicized anyone. I think people like to politicize capitalism and anyone who has authority is evil and wrong and bad. Like you said, David, it's the players, you know, it's got to fight for the players. And I actually think that's a very good comparison. A lot of people see themselves in those shoes that they would want to say those things to their boss because of what they believe is to be unfair. But, you know, it's just, which is ironic, like you said, David, because all these players are making literally millions and millions of dollars. And, it's kind of hypocritical, but, I think a lot of it too has to do with just our society is been taught that if you have power and you have lots of money, that makes you automatically evil, which it can for some people for sure, but those aren't bad things, you know. It's the human heart that's the bad thing, but right, you know.
I mean, there's just as many evil people that people are broke.
Who are broke that if you shared a meal with them, you'd probably never do that again because they would let you know how much it costs, and who aren't, you know, that they're not greed works on both sides. I'll just say that greed works on both sides. So, but David, we had another segment, but this podcast is kind of running a little long. Why don't we do, are you okay with talking about our segment that we were going to talk about? Do you mind talking about it next week?
Yeah, I think we need to do that. It's a little preview.
Not at all.
Going to want to miss that.
Yeah, and you know, that was a good, we're like a 2-minute offense, David. We're like a 2-minute offense. We always can change the plans right away. We had I forgot what it was called. Not no huddle. We had an audible. We changed the plan. And Colton's not here to sign us off, David, but do you think it's time to just end this thing?
Just end it. Thanks for joining us here on the Let's Get Ready to Football podcast. Follow us on Instagram at Ready to Football Pod, or leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/readytofootballpod. And make sure you hit subscribe so you can come back next week and hear another great edition of the podcast. Have a great week.